sorry, but I have to let you go. And it's purely budgetary. It's not personal.
I'm gonna kill myself!
Wow.
I'm going to kill myself, and it's your fault!
That's an overreaction.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, week one recap. Ethan, Weiss, Nick, and William, 27, here with us.
Who let him in here?
Hand up, that's on me. Before we get into it, take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow Will at 20, spelled T-W-E-N-T-E-E, 27. The blog at Gotham SN. You know where to subscribe. Let's get into it. It's the worst Giants game I've ever watched, hands down, especially given some of the expectations that some members of this podcast, who I won't name names, probably had, all of us, if you're not picking up the joke. I don't really know where to start. Quite frankly, there was nothing good to come from that game, although I'm sure Will has some overly nuanced positive take that he's going to spin. Weiss, I'll start with you. Go around the horn.
Yeah, that was the worst Giants game I've ever watched in my life. And that's saying something because we've watched a lot of bad football over the last decade, right? Nothing went right. There's nothing you can take away from that game and say, well, we can at least do, like, it was bad. The Giants didn't look like they belonged on the football field with the Dallas Cowboys. I think I summed it up by saying that the Dallas Cowboys kicked the Giants in the nuts for 3 hours over and over and over again. And it was a reminder to the Giants from the Cowboys that you are not supposed to be on this field with us. You're not good enough to be on this field with us. You're not close. Sorry that you thought you were, but you're not. And you can continue to add talent, quotation marks, talent. But we're just going to continue to get better and add more talent too. And that's what they did. There was no new pass rusher on that field than last year. It's the same guys, right? Michael Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, Dorrance Armstrong. You know, it's the same guys. Jonathan Hankins, it's the same people. Sam Williams. It's the same pass rush. But this was worse than what it was last year, which was historically bad on that Monday Night Football game. That's pretty alarming. And I'll pass it to you guys, but we'll go more in depth on some of the things that happened. But I really thought, from a fan perspective, that these kind of days were over. You know what I'm saying? Like, these kind of embarrassing, demoralizing losses were over. And this might be the worst of it, but I really thought these type of things were, we weren't going to see this anymore. Like, at the very least, we might not be able to beat Dallas yet, but we weren't going to get embarrassed like that.
I just, to echo what Weiss just said, man, a throttling, sitting through a driving rainstorm for 3.5 hours after driving an hour each way, just an absolute kick in the balls to everybody who was there last night. You felt really good going into that game. You thought you had a good chance of winning that game outright, let alone, you know, just to be competitive. And it was uncompetitive by the time it was 16-0. The blocked field goal and the pick six, that game's effectively over because the Giants can't pass block when it's a neutral situation where they might run the ball. In those obvious passing situations where Dallas gets to tee off, and they got to tee off for the entire game. McCarthy had the starters in there on defense driving Jones into the earth's core with like 8 minutes to go in the game. And yes, I stayed the entire game like a lunatic, but just nothing you can do. I saw you put your hand up, Will. I respect it. I refuse to leave early on principle, but just utter ass kicking. And you can't, there's nothing to take away positively. You hope Andrew Thomas is okay, because if he's got a nagging hamstring all year, the season's over, effectively, because he's the only lineman who's competent and the only one you feel moderately okay about. The interior of the offensive line was atrocious. They couldn't pick up basic stunts last night. We're just guys inverting on the pass rush defensively, and they looked up and, oh, that guy's already passed me. And Jones got his ass kicked last night. I mean, he only completed like 16 passes. One of the single worst games I've ever seen the Giants play. And you feel like, hey, you made a lot of progress last year, but it doesn't matter when Dallas is that much better than you.
Yeah. I mean, before we get to Will, I mean, Weiss and I think effectively nailed it in the season preview episode regarding the offensive line. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Weiss honed in specifically on Evan Neal. We'll talk about him. But to me, the offensive line was the biggest question. Obviously, you know, Andrew Thomas at this point isn't really a worry outside of his new hamstring injury, which he got chasing down a blocked field goal, which, again, I have no idea how McGaughey is. I don't even know if that's how to pronounce his name. Don't even know how he still has a job. It's just year after year, Giants special teams continues to be a joke, but I digress. The offensive line is just a massive, massive concern. I mean, Andrew Thomas is going to be your left tackle for the next, hopefully, his entire career. Outside of that, you really, really, really hoped that you saw some glimpse of improvement from Evan Neal. And I understand that this was a test, a huge test, probably one of the bigger tests that he's going to face this season. Although they have the 49ers week three, they have the Cowboys again, they have the Eagles twice. Could be a massacre. John Michael Schmitz, first game in the rain, a game to forget. Low snaps all night, already, you know, adding to so many of Jones' struggles behind an offensive line that was getting beaten within 1 second. Now he has to take an extra half a second or so to bring in the snap. Again, just another guy with high draft capital that you hope improves. But the guard situation on this team is bad. I think we had criticized Dable and Bobby Johnson a little bit for the constant switching that was reported in camp. And now I think we know why. And it's because they said, here are two jobs, starting NFL jobs. Someone please take them. And no one wanted to take them. And it is a bit of an indictment on Joe Shane so far that he has spent very little draft capital in total on the offensive line. And they're still bad. He spent seventh overall on Neal. Great. He spent a second this year on Schmitz. Outside of that, he spent a third on Azudu, who looks awful, just unstartable if he's not able to beat out Glowinski or Bredesen. So you can throw that one out. And then Marcus McKeithen for a fifth round, like, that's basically nothing. And in a league where offensive linemen who hit free agency rarely don't re-sign with their teams because it is such an important position on the football field and it is so difficult to get those guys, you effectively have to draft them and you have to draft them well. And so far, the early indications are that we spent seventh overall on a right tackle who probably isn't going to be the right tackle of the future of this team. And I know we did this whole thing with Andrew Thomas, but at least Andrew Thomas showed various improvements throughout his rookie year, throughout his second year. We haven't seen any of that from Neal, and he looks overmatched. He looks scared. So I'm concerned. I'm very concerned about the offensive line.
Yeah, I had like a few, I have like 12 different points I want to hit, so I'll try to get a couple of them. But, you know, the U.S. Open wrapped up yesterday, and I haven't watched the match yet because I was at the game when it was happening, but Novak won it all again. And what Novak does is basically, and he's done for over a decade, for multiple decades at this point, he takes his opponent, he takes their strength, and he beats them at their strength, and he just completely takes their legs and their willpower. And at some point in the game, basically, the dam breaks and he just rolls. And that's what we saw last night. I mean, what kills me is that the special teams, like the field goal unit, was just out, you know, that flipped the game. You know, a field goal with the operation with my guy, you talk about my guy, Casey Kreider. And we've got, you know, the greatest kicker in Giants history, who's now signed to a pretty top of market contract through age 38. And that battery got a field goal blocked that was returned for a touchdown. And after that point, the game was completely different. Like the Giants weren't playing, weren't playing on a level playing field. They were playing uphill, and it just snowballed and got worse. You know, I listened to your guys' season preview. I did not see the road to 4-0 as clearly as some other members of this podcast. I was actually at the tailgate saying, I really think we win tonight. And I'm more worried about Arizona than I am about Dallas, not necessarily like trying to talk about Dallas, but thinking like, you know, the Giants could really show up. They've been looking for like circling this game for months.
If you had assumed that they beat the Cowboys, then you're worried about a letdown in Arizona. Exactly. On the road. It makes sense.
Exactly. A letdown at Arizona on the road right before a short week at San Francisco, which right. Is another kind of like, it's really easy for that game to have been looked ahead. And this was as bad as possible. I remember I was talking to a buddy of mine this week, and he was talking about how rookie MLB pitchers tend to have success because, you know, the film's not really out. Like, pit hitters don't really understand how to beat them. And I think I talked to you the last time I was on of saying that Kafka really pulled some numbers over the opponents last year. And I felt like we would lose a little bit of that edge because people would be able to see what's coming. And you could really see, like, Dallas almost knew exactly where the ball was going at times. And they just really outclassed us.
Yeah, I mean, listen, not to cut you off, but it's a good point. And you sort of looked at what the Giants added this past offseason in terms of just adding more speed to the receiving group. They added Waller, who can burn. They did not have a chance to showcase any of that, period. You know, and you sort of hoped that you would see that improvement in the offense, especially week one. They were really well coached last year, and they were doing it with all the limitations that they had. And you were hoping that with the additions this past offseason, that some of those limitations, not all, but some were fixed, and that we would get a sort of a new look on the offense with a lot of the speed that was added. I know Collinsworth was talking about it ad nauseum to start the game about all the speed that the Giants added. And then that take eventually turned into, well, you know, hold on, they're not that fast. They got a little faster, but they're not that fast.
And like LeBron.
Jones had no time to even utilize that newfound speed on offense. It was a sad display of coaching, preparation. And I said it on Twitter. It's an indictment on the coaching staff when you can't even manufacture the time for Jones, knowing how good the Dallas pass rush is, right? How many times do we see it all over the league year in and year out where a team with an overmatched offensive line gets their mobile quarterback into space in order to create that time? And we didn't even see that on Sunday night. So embarrassing, sad. I use this facetiously. I'm speechless. I'm obviously not, but it's like, it's unbelievable.
I'm going to give you guys some pushback. I don't put this, there's something I put on the coaching staff, but to me, this was on the pro personnel department, because if Light was playing receiver for the Giants, when you talk about the speed of Light, the Giants still couldn't get the ball to him because there was no time to opt. They couldn't run slants. I was talking to Nick about this. You couldn't run a simple slant where you get the ball out quick. You know, those quick routes. They couldn't even do that. There was a Cowboys player unblocked every single play.
Daniel Jones was hit or sacked on 19 of 35 passing plays.
And there was a Cowboys player unblocked on all 35 of those plays. I went back and I watched the 37 dropbacks from Daniel Jones, and there was a Cowboy player unblocked on all of them.
I'm going to have to rewatch the game. You know, I was at the game until the very end last night. I was at my seats. I was, a little sauce from the pregame. And I remember emotions, and I remember it slipping away. I remember the Cowboys fan who sits in front of me, who I've known for almost 30 years at this point, who came directly from the US Open final. He lost a family member this year. And I kept making a note, as soon as she comes in, I'm going to, you know, give her a hug and, you know, tell her I hope she's okay. She comes in during the pick six and just starts pointing and laughing at me. And I was like, you know, I want to take the high road here, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, kind of leave me alone right now. Like, this is tough. But, you know, you heard me banging this drum the last time you had me on, that there's a difference between good and bad coaching, and coaching that works out well, you know, and generates good results, and coaching that doesn't. How many times have we talked about last year how everything that could have gone right did go right?
Yep.
This year, this week so far, was a lot of that regression coming back. I mean, so much.
Yeah,
of just
but it
the
was
nonsense
basically
broke.
Sure, but
we saw this last year.
No, but the previous years under Joe Judge, it was Murphy's Law. It was everything that could go wrong went wrong. Last year, everything that could go right went right. It was a pendulum swing in the other direction. You're hoping that eventually this team finds a middle ground somewhere where not everything is going to go wrong and not everything is going to go right. They just play a competitive fucking football game. And they just don't seem to be able to do it.
No. The thing about last year was they had a very easy schedule. And yes, a lot of things did go right for them. But what week one was about was not about, you know, everything that could go right or could go wrong or taking advantage. This was about the gap between where the Giants are in terms of their rebuild to the top of the NFC, right? And it's like, have you closed that gap? See, if they had lost this game 27-24, like, we'd be having a different conversation right now, right? We look at things in a different way. But they didn't, not only did they not close the gap, Will, they didn't, this, the gap extended, and it's, and Dallas made some moves, you know, they got, you know, Gilmore and Brandon Cooks and all that. But the main problem last year when the Giants faced the Cowboys was they weren't talented enough. Like, Dallas's defensive line overpowered the Giants' offensive line. And Ethan, you said they didn't make invest. They did make investments. Like, they used the number 7 pick on Evan Neal. They used a high third round pick on Josh Zudu. They went out and they paid, you know, Mark Glowinski, not top notch money, but they paid him some good money. They went out, they drafted a guard in the second round. Like, they made investments, but the problem is, like, they haven't gotten better. Meanwhile, Dallas comes in here, the same players, but though, like, Sam Williams got better, Dorrance Armstrong got better. Those guys that the Cowboys brought in that are not named Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence, those guys got better. And here's the thing that's the most concerning thing about it all with Evan Neal. I didn't expect an Evan Neal to be able to block Micah Parsons. That's a tough ask. Or DeMarcus Lawrence. But don't get beat by Dorrance Armstrong and Sam Williams and Oa Dugazua's brother.
No, that's
the alarming part. That's the part where you're a Giant fan, you're like, yo, is this guy actually the B word? Like,
no, this is, I disagree with you a little bit, because yeah, when you spend 7th overall on a right tackle, you're expecting them to at least put up at least half competitive reps against some of the top guys. You are. No, even, I don't care who even, you are.
You got to win a rep occasionally. Yes, occasionally. Occasionally,
you don't expect him to shut down Mike. I'm not asking him to shut down Micah Parsons. Give me a 50% success rate.
Yes, that's fine. But to me, the alarming part isn't that he was struggling against Micah Parsons. The alarming part in all this is he was struggling against Dorrance fucking Armstrong and Sam Williams.
I mean, obviously that's
the alarming part. Like, put aside Micah Parsons. If you can't guard Dallas's, or keep saying guard, if you can't block Dallas's second and third string defensive linemen, that's more fucking alarming than Micah Parsons right now. Like, that's what we have to focus on.
I agree, but he was non-competitive across the board. And I'm sorry to push back on it, for an offensive line that Joe Shane inherited that had one solidified starter, to invest in 2 years, 4 total picks, only 2 of which you expect to be starters, that's not enough. It's not. For an offensive line that was as dreadful as they were, especially to just not figure out the guard situation. I mean, you drafted a rookie center with high draft capital, and it's not an easy position to learn, especially for, like, Ray, we're talking about a second round pick, and I understand.
He wasn't that bad.
He had no help.
Exactly, Nick. Exactly. That's the point that I'm trying to make. The guy had no help. It's the same thing. Andrew Thomas is an anomaly. The guy had like 10 different offensive line coaches. He had a rotating cast of guards going right next to him. The fact that he panned out to be an all-pro, like, miracle, top 5 caliber left tackle is nothing short of a miracle. And I really hope that the Giants, like, acknowledge that, because to stick Ben Bredesen and Mark Lewinsky next to a center that you used pretty good draft capital on is going to be detrimental to his development. And that, in my eyes, is unacceptable. And that's the problem that I have.
Well, Bobby Johnson has to go too.
Sure. He's had to. Same with Gawky.
You know, I'm aligned a little bit with Weiss on this. I think if you're looking at how much draft capital teams in general like to devote to the offensive line, you know, you're talking about a top 10 pick, 2 day 2 picks, and a day three pick. Plus, you know, it's not like that's you know, the only looks the Giants have done. They've been very active on the waiver wire. Last year they signed Glowinski, which yet wasn't a record-breaking deal, but looking at the assets the Giants had available, I mean, that's basically like
Nate. He was their biggest free agent signing.
You know, it was more than half of like what they could do, and everything.
They had
else
no
was
money.
Like,
what? But my point is,
but that's the point. So you biggest can't free, get a
go ahead. Only,
you know, there's so many. You look at the edge room. You know, the Giants had to, you know, upgrade the edge room. Look at the nickel cornerback, which still hasn't been fixed. Look at who was starting at inside linebacker last year. I mean, there were so many different areas to upgrade that you can't like fixate on this incredibly important one on the offensive line and say that, you know, this wasn't done sufficiently, so this was neglected. I mean, there were...
When you're paying your quarterback as much as they're paying Daniel Jones, offensive line has to...
And that goes to that next...
And that's why I was talking... Will, if you remember me and you had a conversation, I think it was last year, I talked about how if I'm making a big money splash, I'm doing it on the interior of the offensive line. I even mentioned a guy like Brandon Sheriff. I'm like, I'm going to break the bank because I think continuity is the most important thing when you talk about an offensive line, outside of talent, obviously. And the Giants, they didn't have that at all, and they still don't have it. They still don't have it on the interior of the offensive line. And when you have a young center and you have a young right tackle, you got to have somebody that's a solid starter inside. And they don't have that, a veteran guy. And they don't have that. And instead, you got Mark Lewinsky, who looks done. I mean, he looks finished. And then you got Ben Bredesen. And this is the most alarming thing. I don't think Ben Bredesen was like this good guard. Like, he was okay. But he looked – he's regressed. Like, he's regressed. If you look at him playing, like, he's gotten worse. He didn't play well yesterday.
Oh, I was going to say, the one thing I would like to say about this is you got to look at it through the lens of the game situation, and that's part of why the offensive line probably looked as bad as it possibly could. Because
of course, the game went entirely in Dallas's favor in terms of game script, because you go up early, you force this dreadful offensive line to pass block. Yeah,
that was going to be my point. And because Dallas will give you the run, and they couldn't even run the ball effectively against the front that was teeing off pass rushing. They could barely get 4 yards a carry down 3-4 touchdowns, and they could not do a goddamn thing last night. And it's because the game went as badly as it possibly could off rip. You get down that field, you have a really good first drive. That first drive looked really good until they got to the red zone. And then they have to burn the timeout. They have the false start and the bad snap. And then the field goal gets blocked. And you lose all the good juice you had out of that first possession. They get the pick six. And then the next time they get the ball on offense, they punt. Your game's over at 16-0. It's really ridiculous.
And just to add to this, the ball security all around was dreadful. And it's especially embarrassing when you realize that Dallas plays in a dome. Like, Dallas's home games are not exposed to the elements. You're a team that plays in an outdoor stadium in the Northeast. You cannot have the ball being popped out basically at will all game long. That was
four fumbles?
Totally embarrassing. The Saquon ball pop out, the Hodgins pop out. Daniel Jones, I think, recovered two balls that he had knocked out. That can't happen. Yeah. That can't happen.
You know, I think in terms of like philosophically where the Giants are as a franchise, you know, it's obviously a disservice to look at one game and to really overreact. But I think the general rule on the general feeling on this call for most of the offseason was the Giants are really running this back. What exactly are we running back? We're expecting a whole lot out of a group that, you know, a sustained period of time, not just last year, has probably shown to be a below average group. And There are good players on the team. You guys were talking about the, one Jerry Reese player. I think it was 34 and 18, Shane and his despicable predecessor. But like, if we're looking at like which 34 and which 18 and how much they pay, so much of that 34 is just basically fitting roster spots, you know, around with a little bit of room, because we're paying Leonard Williams $30 million to do what? And, you know, and to be an above average player and to have, you know, the people who supported that trade flex because he gets a tackle, you know, it's really difficult to pay top dollar when you're so far behind playing catch up for financial decisions really from 7 years ago that, you know, still haven't been addressed. You know, I felt like there was a lot of, you know, if everything works perfectly, then everything's going to be perfect kind of hope in the building. And I felt a little bit, you know, guys, I think Joe Shane has been a phenomenal general manager. I think his process has been fantastic. But every move with like the Joe Shane masterclass little commentary has gotten really tedious. And, acting like every move has been an unequivocal win for the Giants. I mean, I think it's a joke, but you know how many times I've seen people earnestly say, oh, the Giants are going to win these close games because we have Dable and I trust Dable. And that means that Dable's going to do the right thing.
Well, I was at training camp and a guy came up to me. He came up with Bobby too, and they came up to us and he was talking to us about, there's a lot of people that are detached from reality. They just look at it and say, we did it in 2007. You know, we did it in 2011. We can do it in 20. Like, you know, like there's a lot of that commentary. But the thing is, Will, you thought the Giants were going to win this game, right?
I did think the Giants were going to win this game. Yeah.
We all did. The fact that they got blown out 40-0 and didn't even look like this was Ball State versus
Georgia. Competitive.
You know, this was, you know, like these big time Power Five programs that play like these no name schools and like paying
a pay game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this was that, except the Giants didn't get paid for it. Like Jerry Jones didn't cut him a check. I'm not saying Dable and Shane like should get like I'm not saying that. With Joe Judge and with Ben McAdoo, the downhill started early in year two. Like you can't avoid that conversation. Like I, you know what I'm saying? Like it started with something like this, something embarrassing, something like that was just disgusting, and everything just went downhill from there.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think there were some people talking about the parallels between last night and 1995, which for the younger listeners and folks on this call, the Giants lost week one 35-0. You know, I didn't watch the game, but I still remember waking up and seeing that the next day and being like, wow, 35-0. And I remember how excited my dad was that week. And obviously that didn't pan out. But I was also really thinking about 2017, which was week one against Dallas too. And we started on defense that game. And that was the year after the Giants had made all those investments in the defense. And the defensive line was fierce with Olivier Vernon, JPP, Snacks Harrison, and Jonathan Hankins, who's now on the other side.
That was the investment was done in 2016.
Right. But I'm saying this was the year later.
Yeah.
They invested it, and then they were running it back. And the Giants had, remember, beaten Dallas twice in the regular season in 2016. Right. And we walked into that thinking that, you know, that we were going to walk away with it. Jack Rabbit had owned Dez Bryant. I rocked my Jack Rabbit jersey last night. And that first possession, the Cowboys ran, I think, like three plays, and they were just around really close to the measuring it. And they got the measurement and they got the first down. They didn't have to go for it on fourth. And it was like you could see just like the ice start to crack there. And then just everything went downhill for Dallas. And I felt that same way about the first drive. Like if that the first drive, the offense did not look, you know, didn't belong on the same field with the Dallas. They had a good first 15 script. They ran plays. And obviously the first 15 script is where the offense should at minimum look like that. But the Giants get points out of that drive, which was very much in play. We could be having a very different conversation about losing, you know, 24-13 instead of 40-0 and not worried about the entire direction of the franchise.
I see what you're saying. Like they lost that game in 2017, 19-3, the one you're talking about. And they still look like they didn't belong on the field with them. Like even though like the defense played well enough, 19 points, but coming out of last night, I'm thinking to myself, truthfully, like man, like I thought we were done with this type of stuff. At the very least, like okay, competitive game down to the wire. Maybe we lose by two scores again, but it's a reality check. And it's sort of like a crossroads now. And I know it's crazy, like we're talking about crossroads, but like, how is this shit going to go now? Is this season going to derail? Like, is it just going to continue to go downhill like all those other previous regimes have done in the post-Tom
Coughlin era? I mean, listen, it's a valid question when you look at
like that's legit my worry. Talent.
When you look at the defensive line talent that they have to face this year, it's okay. And then even some of the teams that don't have elite defensive lines have elite receiving groups. Like the Dolphins. I'm sorry, Trey Hawkins and Deontay Banks going up against Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. That's going to be a disgusting display.
Like Wink Martindale says, pressure breaks pipes, right? Last year, there was no pressure on the Giants. Brian Dable could have won one game and we would have said that's one too many. This year, there's a little bit of pressure. There is some pressure.
And the Giants invited that pressure, which is yes. Really where I was, you know, concerned. And I've listened to some podcasts and what the most concerning part of the process that I've observed, if this is accurate, and you've probably heard the same thing, was listening to like how the price tag on Jones essentially went up with each win, like a compelling win at the end of the year. Like, I mean, by that logic, if he were negotiating now, he should probably, you know, he'd be a $22 million quarterback again. Like, and I think that the overreaction in that small stretch of games when everything was firing, you know, as well as possible, it's alarming. You know, I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm not saying, you know, it was a mistake, but it was definitely the riskier situation, you know, and, you know, which put a lot more pressure on Shane. You know, if Shane went with a placeholder quarterback this year, nobody would really be even considering
that he got things. I don't know about that. I understand what you're saying in terms of the quarterback, but if they had let Daniel Jones walk, right, which is essentially what you're saying, and he would have gone to a team and been and had success, people would still be looking at Joe Shane sideways.
Just real quick, I don't think anyone's – I don't think Joe Shane thinks that way.
Me either.
Personally. But, Will, what I think you're getting at is essentially like, yeah, I think the $40 million was an overpay. I always thought it was an overpay, but I was happy to have Dan Jones back. Do I think he's the $20 million quarterback or worse that we saw last night? No. Do I think he's the $40 million quarterback he got paid as? No. I think the truth lies somewhere in between. But because of that late season run, Joe Shane was sort of, you know, put against the wall a little bit.
off of that, I think there's a world in which if they don't win that playoff game, you get everybody a little bit more like, well, are we sure about this? And that's kind of why I think there was always going to be a contingent that was vehemently like, yeah, you got to do it no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, because there have been the Dan Jones loyalists since they drafted him, regardless of how he's actually performed. But for the most part, most rational people were like, okay, 2 years, you get out after two if it's not great. Because they won that playoff game, for a vast majority of this fan base that doesn't think about the bigger picture, that's just worried about, well, I want a competitive team to watch every week, and whatever happens, happens. The people who say, well, it happened in 2007, it happened in 2011, why couldn't it happen now? For those people, they had to keep Jones no matter what. For the more rational, level-headed people who are more concerned with eventually trying to win a championship with the best process possible, I think there's a world in which you could have argued they probably should have just tagged Jones and let Saquon walk and then reassess this next year. Or to Will's point, said, hey, if we got to get a stopgap guy in here, because it's not about this year. And realistically, winning a Super Bowl is probably not next year either. It's the year after that, because they still have to turn over the roster a lot. And that's what the big picture about this season for me becomes about. Finding out, and it sounds stupid to say because we've only played one game and they could be fine. The rest of this season is about figuring out who are your building blocks for what next year's team and the year after that looks like. And that's what it always was going to be this year. Ethan, you have been pounding the drum. It's year three. It's year three. It's year three. We can't let one game derail an entire season, but it was never about this season in terms of winning a Super Bowl.
But the thing is, this game was so bad that it could derail the season. And that's a conversation that needs to be had.
I don't think one game derails a season, especially not the first week, because you had everything go wrong that possibly could. Your best player gets hurt on the first drive of the game. Your entire offensive line trickle down looks awful because your best offensive lineman is hurt. Your quarterback gets the shit knocked out of him for the entire game, which we should talk about at some point, how you guys feel about them keeping Jones in the game until it was well into the fourth quarter. I don't think one game derails it, especially when you have Arizona. You have Arizona next week, which I'm not going to say that's a slam dunk because they look decent against Washington. But one game does not derail a season this early. It can in the midway point.
I have two little things I want to say. One is this conversation about Jones is, I think we're missing a key part of it, which is just still the economic, landscape of the team. And it's like, Jones in a vacuum at $40 million is like, I think he can very well, by 2024, 2025, make that price tag look good. The problem is, should a team be doing that when they're extending 36-year-old kickers because their, financial resources are so slim and far between, when we can make one or two free agent moves, but we're still not really in a position to be all systems firing. And at this rate, we've been talking about year three since everything started. Year three is going to still have dead cap from the last regime. And
yeah, but they got cap flexibility next year.
And the cap will keep going up.
They have cap flexibility. They're going to be able to make decisions, but there's still going to be overhanging dead weight. And that was one point. And the other point I just wanted to make is, yeah, I don't think the season is derailed whatsoever. I mean,
I just want
to make the quick point that you see NBA playoffs where you'll see like a game one, go this way. And then that team, the team that blows the team out in game one ends up losing the series. There are clean slates. And the Giants could easily squeeze out, enough clean slates and turn this thing around in a couple weeks.
I'm not saying that this. What I'm saying is that I have PTSD from the last three coaching cycles, mainly McAdoo and Judge, where you got this promising year one, and then you come into year two, and it just falls flat on its face, and the decline we see early. It's just given me that PTSD of that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and I'm not saying Dable is that. I'm just saying, like, this is a crossroads situation.
Where I see this differently is maybe outside of this call, it's perceived a little bit differently. But, I think most Giants fans really understand 2016 was business as usual. That happened to work out really well. And then 2017, we tried to run it back and we showed that, we weren't what we were pretending to be. 2020, the Giants were celebrating a lot of success that, wasn't really there. We won six games on our week schedule. I mean, if Colt McCoy didn't beat Russell Wilson, I think the approach going into 2021 would be very, very different.
Yes.
The four of us, I believe, were most excited about from last year weren't making the playoffs and winning a game. It was the radical shift in process.
Yes.
And
but
I think
the thing is, Will, is that the same issues that derailed those guys from a personnel standpoint, those same issues are still happening to the Giants. the same offensive line problems, the same, you know, embarrassing moments that we're seeing.
You know, worst case, the Giants lose to Arizona, the Giants lose to San Francisco, the Giants find themselves 0-3.
Anything continues to text me pictures of Caleb Williams.
We're going to. We become sellers at the deadline. The Giants, you know, become in substantially better financial shape for next year. And the Giants, you know, find a way to pivot and make lemonade. I don't think that would have been the case in 2017 or 2021. It was, okay, maybe we need an even better wide receiver. So we'll, you know, pay even more money to whatever the best Madden rating is available on the market, which was literally what the strategy was.
Yeah, but Weiss, I think your season derailment take and the PTSD, it's certainly emotional, but I think to a lesser extreme.
You're not having PTSD?
Not really. Wow. But I'm agreeing with you. Hold on. It's not to that extent, but it has merit because, again, we hammer it home. You have to just look at their schedule and look at what the issues are. And these issues aren't going to get alleviated by this schedule. It's not like I'm sorry, but like the Cardinals, their coach is the former defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. You think this guy doesn't know how to expose this defensive line? The 49ers are a great pass rush.
Can I say one thing?
Go ahead.
How does Arizona hire Jonathan Gannon but not Dan Quinn?
I think Dan Quinn's had his shot at being a head coach, and he's a much better defensive coordinator.
I think Dan Quinn is a much better. We're looking at that job he did in Atlanta the wrong way. He was pretty successful in Atlanta.
Sometimes. And who knows? Maybe the guy just doesn't want a head coaching job, right? Maybe he's like a wink. He's just happy being a defensive coordinator, especially with such a dominant group that he has. Why not?
I'm just saying in regards to the PTSD take, it's the same issue.
Okay, I'm agreeing with you. My point is that like you're worried about the season derailing and it coming from an emotional place. If you take the emotions out of it and you look at what the issues are and you look at what some of these teams that they're facing are going to have, it's not totally unwarranted. That's my point.
And Arizona was always
the chances that Mike Kafka stays in blue are up about 150%.
Well, we'll see. I think a lot of that depends on Andrew Thomas, to be honest.
And it's tough, man, to get on the play calling from yesterday.
I'm saying the chances that he sticks. I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think last year he did an incredible job with a very, very bare kitchen. I think right now the wide receiver room is still like
good. It
doesn't have an identity. I don't think. I don't like it.
I mean, I like what they're doing at receiver. I think
the Giants were really behind the eight ball. So I think they've made some moves to make it better. But it's like if you're looking at what the rotation is, there's no number one, not really a number two. There are some exciting pieces. I think Hyatt is going to be somebody who's going to be a number two very, very soon. Like Paris Campbell never really did anything in Indianapolis. And yeah, he's a
correct. It was an awful signing.
NFL caliber player.
Yes, it was.
But the idea that like, oh my God, Paris Campbell's going to come in. The offense is going to be so fast. Like watch out, league. You're not going to know what hit you. I never really understood where we were going with that. Like what does Paris Campbell do that Jamison Crowder wouldn't have done, for a minimum level deal? I mean, a little bit more, he's definitely, you'd rather have Paris Campbell out there than Jamison Crowder, but it's like, the Giants have a bunch of wide receiver threes instead of wide receiver fours, but really no wide receiver ones. And, there was no point in that game where it was like outside of Darren Waller, there was like a guy that, you can go and get it. And even Darren Waller was covered, and was a lot less effective than I was hoping after seeing what he did in preseason.
So one Agreed. Thing I want to add off of what Will just said, the Giants didn't really have an offensive identity last year. They kind of melded based on what the game situation was, where they had some games where they threw the ball 40 times. They had some games where they ran the ball 40 times. And that was out of necessity. They weren't a talented group last year. The hope this year, and we talked about this a lot in the offseason during training camp, was that they turned over a good chunk of the skill positions. And we thought they would be able to tailor the offense to the personnel they had. They would be able to throw the ball a little bit more. We talked about that was part of the justification for giving Jones the extension and giving him the money he asked for was, with better weapons, we're going to be able to give him more opportunities to make better plays. And you can use Saquon as more of a complementary part of your offense where he runs the ball for emphasis. He only has to run the ball 12 to 15 times a game versus 20 to 25 because you're going to be able to throw the ball so effectively. Part of the issue
can't throw it to him effectively.
They can't throw it to him effectively and they can't pass block. And that's really the concern. And something I wanted to throw in here is it was great that they were able to manufacture a lot of gimmicky stuff last year. A lot of the design rollouts, the RPO stuff to buy Jones time, and the Wildcat stuff. And last night, they tried doing the RPO stuff where someone's coming in unblocked, which means a receiver's undefended somewhere on the field because somebody's coming in unblocked. And they couldn't even get the ball out on the alert on the RPO to the guy who just turns at the line of scrimmage to catch the ball. They couldn't even do that against a good pass rush. And they've got a lot of good pass rushes on this schedule. So it's great they turned over all the skill positions. But if they can't even get the ball out on these alerts for the RPOs, this isn't a functional NFL offense if we can't get the ball out on these alerts.
Can I ask you guys a question? How much of the Giants' issues is talent on the offensive line? How much of it falls on the shoulders of Bobby Johnson? Because not being able to block a stunt, like, that's coaching, dude.
You know, I think it's both. It's always both. It's never just one thing in any of these situations. That's the rational answer. It's always a little bit of both.
What's the percentage?
It's probably close to 50-50 in all honesty. I haven't played offensive line since I was 11, so I can't give you any points on the finer details of playing offensive line. But just from what you understand about how coaching works at the professional level, there's some talent in that group. And also, you know, fifth round picks, free agents. This isn't exactly a murderer's row of offensive line. Well, they're not the Eagles. But it is on the coaching as well that they haven't developed any of these guys either, that they've had some of these guys in camps for 2 or 3 years now, and they still don't look like they're NFL players.
Well, let's look at it like this. Last year, remember their DB room was just always Patchwork. Changing, right?
Yeah.
Look at the job Jerome Henderson did.
You know what? What I'll say though, Weiss, is I'll say there's a third kind of leg that I'll put it on. You know, you're asking about talent and coaching, and the third point is I'll just say like kind of time developing. Like, you know, John Michael Schmitz, I am very, very bullish on as a long term interior lineman for the Giants. I was not necessarily expecting him to show up in his first game of his NFL career and show Dallas like you welcome to row the boat country now. And, you know, just one point that I thought about kind of what we're just talking about with the wide receiver room. What is Paris Campbell's role if and when Wandale Robinson is healthy? You know, that's a good thing. You want to have, you know, NFL caliber players that you can't deploy because you have other NFL caliber players. But if we're talking about like, you know, where not to spend minimum deals, I'd rather the Giants have stockpiled those assets to make a real run at T. Higgins without being behind the eight ball rather than kind of, you know, fill it with B minus C plus players.
The thing about these hypothetical receivers that would potentially come available is it's all hypothetical.
Like, until it isn't. You know, it was, you know, when the Giants traded Kadarius Toney for a third round pick, that was a third round pick so that when somebody comes available and there's a team trying to get rid of somebody, the Giants have resources to make, you know, to make a move. You know that's going
to
happen.
But they still have the resources to make a move for a wide receiver. Like, Paris Campbell doesn't hinge that. Like, he doesn't, like, they can still go and get a wide receiver one.
But they need those assets to keep building out the roster, which is also part of the issue.
But the asset is $4 million.
No, I mean, the picks. You got to trade for one of these wide receivers.
Right,
that's what Will means.
No, yeah. But also, you know, but that $4 million, you know, you look at what that $4 million could be used for with, you know, where the Giants are. The Giants just made two restructures to save like $1.5 million. Like, you know, $4 million.
Paris Campbell has a role. Like, he had a good camp. He was one of Daniel Jones's go-to guys. Like, it's not like he doesn't have a role.
I'm not coming here to say that like Paris Campbell has no place on the team. I'm coming here to say that, you know, given what the state of the roster looks like, the difference that Paris Campbell offers over a replacement level, you know, not having the pick of the litter is fairly trivial, and that the Giants should be doing would have been better served to upgrade the top of the roster than the middle of the roster.
My pushback is that in March, they didn't know where Wandale Robinson was, and I think they needed a slot guy ready week one, and that's why they went and got Paris Campbell. Throughout camp, I saw Paris Campbell have a role where you're like, okay, this guy's going to catch balls. Outside of Darren Waller, I would say it was between him and Darius Slayton, who Daniel Jones was the most comfortable to throwing the ball. What happens when Wandale comes back? I don't know. We'll see. With the receivers, I like what they did with what was available. The problem is it doesn't matter how much speed you add on the outside. We go back to the same thing we've been talking about for a decade now. Your quarterback can't have enough time to throw a slant. I don't care how fast your receivers are.
All right, let's talk about Dable and his decision to keep the starters in late.
I don't care.
So that's my take. My head was like, well, they probably shouldn't be keeping their $40 million quarterback in the game. My heart was like, fuck them. I don't care. Like, they sort of deserve this in a sense.
I don't care. Let them be out there in the rain and suffer.
I don't care.
All I'll say is I agree with you, Ethan. Like, in my head, it's like, they probably shouldn't be out there. But at the same time, we know Daniel Jones likes tough love. We know that he responds well to getting yelled at and being put in these uncomfortable situations. Some of the best games he had last year came at times where Dable's like, I need more out of him during press conferences leading up to the game. And there was some element of high school football, little league in there where it's like, no, you're going to wear this. This is your fault too. You don't get to come out of the game just because you make a lot of money. You fucking threw that terrible interception across your body when this game was only a 2-score game. You don't get excused from this just because you make more money than everyone else. You're part of this team too. That was where I was at on it. I agree. There's a point where logic has to come in and you probably should have taken him out. But at the same time, the football guy in me is like, no, you were part of the reason this team is losing. Everybody's got to wear it. That's kind of what it is, where you leave a pitcher in way too long after he's given up like 9 runs in the first inning. Well, you got to wear this. This is your fault too.
Yeah, I'm a little less indifferent. And actually, I'd say I'm a little more pro the decision. If nothing else, you know, the fans there paid for a product. I was... At the end of the game, my family had left long before me. I'd went up a couple levels with some neighbors in my section. They all left. So I went down to like the front row and, you know, there were like a sea of Cowboys fans. There were like 4 or 5 teenage Giants fans. We were yelling. We were staying positive. Frankly, we were yelling, keep our head up. And then I saw one other person, you know, going through around the sideline, telling everyone to keep their head up. And it's my favorite number 2 overall pick. So, you know, I respect for the, you know, for the same approach, but.
Oh, wait. So Saquon came over and told you guys to keep your head up?
What? No, not us. He was saying to like Jordan Riley and like, you know, the guys who were sitting on the bench. Yeah. The same guys we were yelling to keep their head up. So, you know, once again, we see things eye to eye. You know, these teenagers were chanting like, we want one. We want one. Just give us one. You know, I like the idea that the Giants were putting their best foot forward and trying to get on the board. And part of the reason that this game got out of hand is because at no point did I feel like the Giants stopped saying, okay, let's just try to make the scoreboard not get embarrassing. When they had the ball, they were trying to score. They weren't trying to run out the clock. For all the people who had a problem with the last regime, who may have taken, you know, the opposite approach and was, you know, saying like, let's hang around and, you know, maybe see if our defense can make a play and turn things around. You know, you got to respect that. You know, I think that sets the right message. And I think that's, you know, that's the way I'd want the coach to do things.
One of the things you made a good point about not showing that you're giving up, throwing in the towel. After the game, I watched the post-game press conference with Brian Daboll. And I think a reporter asked him about effort. And you could just see how angry he got. It's almost like that there's zero question about effort with his guys. I think he took it very personal. And that showed me a lot like, okay, like that guy is not, he's never going to throw in the towel. And you're right. They didn't coach that game in the fourth quarter when that game got out of hand, or in the second half when that game got out of hand, to like, let's just run out the clock. Let's go home. Let's avoid injury. No, it was like, we're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep trying to play, you know. Crazy things have happened like that. Like they just kept playing. And I think that was part of the reason why
I was yelling in my section. We got them right where we want them.
That's part of the reason why the final score is 40-0 and not like 29-0. Because the Giants just, they were just going to keep going.
They went for it on fourth down instead of punting it. Yeah.
Yeah. They were not going to throw in the towel and that's fine. To me, it's about how you respond from this. That's why I say that I bring up that crossroads. Like, how are you going to respond? Is this loss going to derail your season? Or are you going to show like that? That's not who we are. That's not what we're building. Go into Arizona, whoop some ass in Arizona, and then go from there. Because at the end of the day, it is one game. Lose 27-24, lose 40-0. It's one, right? I'm interested to see how they respond. How does Brian Daboll respond from this? Because, man, it is.
To Weiss and Ethan, who are watching from home, and I'm going to have a better answer on this probably in a few hours, but how do the corners look?
It looked all right. Deontay Banks looked all right. There was nothing like earth-shattering.
I mean, it's hard to know because, you know, the Cowboys weren't on offense until they were up by 3 possessions. So
the Cowboys were running a lot of vanilla stuff. It was almost like a preseason game for them. They were not doing anything. They weren't doing anything that was like, Like they weren't like, we're going to throw at that corner. We're going to throw at that corner. They just ran the ball, third and short.
Well, they did target. They did target Trey Hawkins.
They did. That pass interference was a really bad call. The replay clearly showed. The replay clearly showed Brandon Cooks threw himself into Trey Hawkins. Literally threw himself into Trey Hawkins. I hated that call, and the Cowboys ended up getting three on that drive. That was not a good call. The cornerbacks we're going to see as the season goes along. People will try to look at it game to game, but to me, I'll answer the question about the corners, you know, 8 weeks into the season. Because I think there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows. You know, it's going to be good, there's going to be bad.
And, you know, absolutely. And cornerback has about as fast, you know, as steep a learning curve as any position does. And
they call it a bipolar position. Because
exactly. And cornerback's a position that everybody hates and says they suck because, you know, they're the ones who, you know, it's so hard for, you know, it's like an offensive lineman or, you know, or a kicker, for example. Like when they do their job, it's not like, you know, people are like, wow, you know, that was awesome. But when they don't do their job, everyone's like, oh, my God, how is this guy in the league?
The thing about corners, you give up one big play. That's what you can remember for that week. Oh, yeah. Offensive lineman, if you give up a sack, but they still win the game, nobody's going to talk about the fact that you gave up a sack.
What are you guys looking to most accomplish in this upcoming road trip? I mean, outside of, you know, just winning games, like what do you want to see from the team that really makes you feel
a response
points, any points?
I would like them to win by double digits.
I want the Giants to come out in week two and say what happened in week one was not who we are. It's not what we're trying to be, and really show that, hey, we added talent. We might not be as good as Dallas, but we're better than Arizona. We're somewhere in that middle right now. And we're trending up. And that's what I want to see. And that's what I want to see going forward against San Francisco too. Show me week one was personal to you. And show me that that was not a representation of who you are and what you're building as an organization. Not just as a player, not just as Evan Neal, not just as Daniel Jones. I'm talking about overall. Show me the progress. Like that happened. But that's not who we are. That's not what we are. That's not what we're trying to be. That's not what we're building for. This is a changed organization. You know what I mean, Will? That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I feel, you know, and if I don't think wins should be directly, you know, pointing to a quarterback, and I don't, you know, et cetera, but if we just paid Daniel Jones $150 million and we're going against Josh Dobbs and Brock Purdy in back-to-back weeks, like,
right.
You know, we need to show that this team is ready to win with Daniel Jones, who's an upgrade over these other quarterbacks against
exactly
the games. And I know San Francisco is a weird situation because it's like, you know,
it's not weird. They have a good young quarterback, and they have a Super Bowl roster, just like I told Ethan last week, and he laughed in my face. And they went to Pittsburgh and they handled business. But go continue.
Yeah, Pittsburgh sucks though.
Okay. No, but it's, you know, they have a good young.
Be more concerned about your Jags struggling against the Colts.
I don't know of many good young quarterbacks who've had to do less than Brock Purdy has to do with this 49ers.
Exactly.
Maybe Mark Sanchez, you know, in his first couple of years when he had a bully of a defense, a hell of a running game, and decent wide receivers with a hell of an offensive line. But that's what it's why I say it's a unique situation. You know, Brock Purdy's not down by by 17 trying to, you know, throw catch up and throwing pick sixes that way.
Can I say something about Dallas?
Yeah, and then let's wrap it up.
Amazing defense, but I don't see them as a team that's going to go to the Super Bowl.
I agree.
I'm not a believer in Dak Prescott, man.
Me neither.
He's been weird since the leg injury.
That ankle injury really fucked him up.
Yeah. Not a believer in Dak Prescott.
And, you know, there's a real question of what the future is there. I mean, you can't ignore this Trey Lance trade, you know, that giving up a third round pick, right? Or fourth round pick. But to guarantee him $5 million, you basically have to look at it as like a late two or an early three, given, like, you know, the full asset cost, considering how little of his contract's left. You're not doing that, like, unless you really see a possibility that he's helping, you know, he's helping the team down the road. And
yeah, you don't make that trade unless you're going to give him an opportunity to see if he can be a starting quarterback, right?
That's that next level. I'd say, you know, whether giving him the opportunity is the next level, but at least thinking it's a possibility that he'll be ready to take it is, I think, that first kind of.
Well, he's got 1 year left on his rookie contract after this year. You're not picking up his fifth year option, obviously, right? So you traded a fourth round pick for a guy you got to at least, and he was a first round pick, top five pick in the draft. You got to at least see, hey, if I develop,
he's got more guaranteed than my guy Paris Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, you got to see what you got. Just getting kicked in the balls for 3 hours. This is what it felt like.
Yeah,
I sat through the whole thing.
And for what it's worth, I do have to just say that the tailgate and the parking lot energy was phenomenal. And, you know, I really went into this thinking like, this is the first year we're going into it without like kind of already punting next year so that we could pretend to be relevant this year and in a long time. And, you know, was hanging out with so many guys from Twitter, from, you know, friends of Twitter, and just, it was great. There was so much camaraderie. It really felt like the Giants were looking forward. I hope that energy is there for the next home game because, it's, you know, obviously, you know, if the Giants are 1-2 or 0-3 or something like that by week four, which is not where I think things are going to be, but you know, it's obviously a possibility.
Week four is a Monday night game at home against the Seattle Seahawks.
Seattle didn't look good against the Rams. That's feasible.
Well, it's similar. It's another
banger by me with the Seattle.
It's another quarterback who's kind of, you know, not really shown much, but a really, really strong last year who got paid. And, you know, we're going to see if last year was the rule or if the every year before that was the rule. And, you know, and I say that really knowing that I'm talking out of my mouth, because you've heard me say how many times that I think Jones was fairly much the same player last year and the years before, and he just had to do a lot less. So that was a lot easier.
Let's wrap it up. Miserable week one. We'll be back soon. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe. I'm just too depressed to even do the regular housekeeping. We'll talk to you guys soon.